Guys, welcome to The Pulse. And this is actually a special edition. I wanted to see if we could cook during this episode, but I don't think we can do that. But instead, we brought in celebrity chef, entrepreneur, doing charity and philanthropic work, and just a good dude, Chef Jose Garces. Here. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So we had a plan, and we didn't think we could make this work. We were trying to figure out, with all the shows you've done and all the creativity of all your restaurants, if we brought in an easy bake oven and set it up. And then there's a cafe around the corner, and we were going to get, like, Raisin Bran and butterscotch crimpets and Sour Patch Kids and sparkling water. And
saying, got it.
Like, okay, Mr. Iron Chef.
Those are the ingredients.
Yeah.
Those are the ingredients. Yeah. I mean, I think I got something.
You probably could.
Yeah, I would make maybe a take on granola, kind of grind up the Raisin Bran, make it, and then get it crunchy, add some of the...
I'm joking, but how does your mind work to figure that kind of thing out? Like, I talk to you all the time when I see you about how that show always makes me go, what?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny with competitive cooking. And recently I've been on a show called Tournament of Champions on Food Network. And that show, unlike Iron Chef, which I was an Iron Chef for 5 years, with Iron Chef, I was able to kind of had a team. I wasn't on my own. I had, some like preparation that I could do beforehand, kind of knowing it was going to be a secret ingredient. Tournament of Champions is a totally different animal altogether. It's really, it's Guy Fieri. He has a randomizer. He spins it. There's five categories: proteins, vegetables, cooking style, time, and some other wild card that he'll throw in there. And it's a real like 5 minute prep to make something delicious, to make a winnable dish. So I've been in the cooking competition mode recently, and so your mind starts getting there.
I get, and we're gonna go through like a long distinguished career, but when I see that and I hear you describing the Tournament of Champions, that doesn't sound fun. Like, that sounds now obviously I can't really cook, but that sounds like a lot of opportunity to not do well and a huge challenge to create this great dish.
Yeah, I think I find it to be, I've been a competitive chef just for a long time, but in the competitive cooking arena. And I find it's the most exhilarating thing that I do, as it relates to like my career. So because it pushes several boundaries, creativity, flavor building, cooking under pressure, cameras, fog, audience, all that. And while it may sound overwhelming, I tell you what, at the end of it, there's just a sense of satisfaction that I get from it. And listen, I don't always win. I wish I did, but sometimes you lose. And that's also a tough pill to swallow. But I think it teaches you some humility. It teaches you kind of like, basically, hey, it's a competitive world out there. And so, I don't know. There are a lot of lessons for me in the action, and I continue to enjoy it.
I feel like most of us watching, you could give us like chicken and lettuce and potatoes, and we would go, what to do? And you're coming up with all these things. Walk us back. When did this start? Like, when did you get into the whole concept? Was it a really young age? When did you know you had this cooking bug?
Well, it's funny. I went to culinary school in Chicago, and I'd gone to undergrad. I went to cooking school as a vocation, as a trade, because I'd realized that academia wasn't really for me. I really didn't have like a passion for anything at the moment. I was, I had said, hey, I really have to like get a job and start earning. And so I was probably like, 20 or so. Walked into school, Kendall College in Chicago, and realized that, the discipline, kind of the white jackets, the crisp white hats, kind of the brigade style was something for me. So guardrails and kind of putting a lot of things in perspective. And so I got to school, and again, just wanting to learn a trade, I started like competing already with classmates and whatnot. And all of a sudden I'm discovering, hey, I'm actually, I have a talent and I have a passion for creating and cooking. And that happened right away, but it was very much a found skill, a found talent that I didn't even know was underneath that I had. Yeah. I like to cook. My mom and my grandma were great cooks. I cooked with them growing up, but I was more of an eater, less of a cook. So yeah, it was truly a discovery that again, to this day, I still feel like super fortunate about that moment because it's a passion. You know, I wake up still thinking about how to create, how to make delicious foods. You know, how can I push the envelope on other aspects of food and beverage? So yeah, it's been a great career, and I feel so fortunate to have found that and to still be here doing it in a passionate way.
But you had to find it. Like, it wasn't, a lot of people we have on the Pulse, like comedians go, man, when I was five, I had the whole class going, you know, like born with it or developed it over all these years. You really had to find it. It was there, but you had to discover it.
Yeah, I mean, I was an athlete. I played football and wrestled in high school. I thought that might have been a path for me, at least collegiately. No one in my family was in the restaurant or hospitality business. So there was no real big influences at the time. So yeah, it was found out of necessity. And I think that's also kind of neat. You know, if you kind of, sometimes you find yourself, you know, your kind of back is up against the wall and you have to like do. And so, yeah, it really, again, was such a, I feel so fortunate to have found that.
Yeah. It's inspiring to people watching, I guess. It's inspiring to me. Like, I needed a job.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, well, I was, you know, I'd gone to a few years of undergrad and I just was really at this moment. And I'm sure, you know, I have teenage kids. I have my daughters in college too. And I'm like guiding them right now. Like, hey guys, let's stay on track. Let's keep our career paths going. Because at that time, really, I didn't have a lot of guidance. I didn't have a lot of like mentors. And so it was really up to me, you know, to kind of make ends meet and get on. And so, yeah, out of necessity and really at the end of the day, I remember thinking, well, you know what? I just need to like pick up a skill, get a trade. And I think nowadays it's interesting that that's still very relevant in our current society. We need great plumbers, great electricians. We need great carpenters. We still need those trades folks to like keep doing, because otherwise, you know, things won't get built or things won't get done. And I do think there is, and again, just speaking of the trades, there's like a negative perception around it. And I don't know why, because those folks still earn a good living. They have a good quality of life. And I just hope that maybe over time, those stigmas kind of go away and really our youth kind of embrace that vocational trades that are out there.
I think it's a lack of knowledge. And I think that's why discussions like this, when you're talking about those skills and what they can grow into, because I'm at the exact opposite end of the spectrum. Like, I see somebody who can do what you can do. I'm like, yo, I wish I could. Or somebody who comes in and rebuilds my kitchen. And I'll sit there and watch the entire process. I'm like, oh, they're skilled.
Yeah.
And I just don't think people, I agree with you, I don't think people embrace it.
I mean, there are things that need to happen in our economy and so without the trades, we're really kind of, you know, we're in trouble going forward. If everyone just goes out and goes to you know, just science and kind of tech, you know, really, there's going to be some infrastructure issues going forward. So, yeah.
So walk me through, you discover this passion.
Yeah.
Right? This is what I want to do. I found my love. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you get, like, I'd imagine you start getting jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I know Alma de Cuba, I guess.
Here. Sure. Yeah. So I think for me, it was when I got into school, again, not being privy to that world, I discovered there's all these various opportunities, mm-hmm. different aspects of the field, whether it was like working in hotels or working on a cruise line or opening your own restaurant or, you know, creating your own fast casual concept. And all those things were like, I was just like, oh my gosh, there's so many options within this field. And let me go down this path of just first becoming a good chef. Mm-hmm. So that was, to me, that was going to be my foundation on which to like build a career. So I decided to go cook in Spain for about a year. I went to New York for about 5 years and really was in, I think, you know, the probably the one of the, during that time, like some of the best chefs in the world were cooking in New York. So I got to like experience that. And then eventually made my way to Philadelphia in 2000 as an opportunity after being in the field about like, you know, 5 to 7 years. And, you know, I think that was, and that, you know, for young chefs or young culinarians, you know, that like are watching TV and seeing kind of everything being glamorized, I think you have to put the time in. You got to put the time in. You got to kind of like really make sure you have a good base of learning, a good foundation, whether it's cooking in whatever field, right? And so for me, by the time I got to Philadelphia in 2000, I'd basically been in the field almost 10 years. And it was my first executive chef position. So I kind of ascended to this exec chef position at Alma de Cuba. And worked for a great restaurateur, Steve Starr. Mm-hmm. My chef mentor, Doug Rodriguez, I was collaborating with him on flavors. Eventually opened Elvez with Steve as like a second, like multi-unit. Okay, I know I can do two restaurants at the same time. And learning kind of the background of the business side of it from Steve and his organization. So by the time 2005 came around, I was ready to open my own restaurant. I'd been in the field almost 12, 13 years, and I knew I could do it. And so that's when I opened Amada, right here down on Chestnut Street. And I can't believe we're going to be 18 this October. So, and, you know, from that point to now in those 18 years, so much has happened.
Yeah.
So much has happened. And not only like career-wise, obviously in the world, but it's been such an amazing, amazing run since then.
How many restaurants is it?
So we're a handful here in Philadelphia. So that's
how you know you got a lot of restaurants. It's like, how many? Oh, a handful. You got a bunch of them.
A good amount. And, you know, they're each special. Each restaurant, you know, again, as you open these and you kind of embrace them, that you get this emotional attachment to all of our spots, and we're proud of all of them. But here in Philly, we've got the Old Bar, Amada, Volver, we have Buena Onda, Village Whiskey, and we recently opened a new Amada in Radnor. We opened a Buena in Radnor. We're kind of like, you know, after being in the field and kind of really exploring a lot of different parts of the industry, we've decided to really kind of hone in and focus on a few brands and kind of really get more focused, put some more energy into it.
And I'm laughing when like eight restaurants is, we're going to just keep it small. We're going to focus and move in. But compared to 20, you know, there've been periods of time where it was like 20.
Well, we had a bunch where, you know, I licensed my name, created concepts, and that's a whole other part of the business that I think not everyone like is clear on. You know, as a celebrity chef, as someone who's creative, sometimes you're sought out to create concepts create menus and public facing. Nobody knows if I own it, or somebody like it, right. You know, the back end is what it is. And so, with that, you know, it's been great. A lot of opportunity to travel and move around. And we had restaurants in Palm Springs and in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Chicago. But like in the past few years, it's been like, okay, let's really like hone in and get focused. And so, yeah, we're excited about Buena Onda, fast casual taqueria. We launched it in 2016, have 5 stores, recently franchised it. And that was a goal, as a bucket list for me in kind of our industry. I want to create a franchise. I want to create something that is replicatable in throughout the country and maybe internationally. So we're on that journey. Amada, as we said, is turning 18, but we've had one at Ocean's Resort and Casino, mm-hmm. in AC, and that restaurant performs great. People love it. It's like it made the top 25 casino and resort restaurant list. And then the third in Radnor. And so we're excited about that brand to continue moving it forward. And we also launched a coffee shop close by as a remake of Garces Trading Company. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, kind of my take on what a great curated gourmet kind of coffee shop could look like. And so, yeah, and that's still kind of new, and we're still, again, all this is, you know, nothing happens overnight. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of like attention to detail and moving things forward, and people, honestly. We got to have, you know, great people, a great work environment and culture to help that all kind of come together.
One of the things you just said that was interesting to me, because we are, and we have a lot of, like, patting ourselves on the back, we have a lot of celebrities that come through the Pulse. And when you talked about that concept of celebrity chef,
yeah,
you know, it's another opportunity for people who, like yourself, loved to cook and didn't always understand all of the additional opportunities that come with it. When did that become a thing? Like, when did it, you kind of go, I'm doing something I love, but this, there's a lot to this.
So I think, you know, and I use the term very loosely. Like, I don't ever consider myself a celebrity, me personally. I consider myself a cook, a dad, a husband, you know, just kind of, you know, a guy who wants to mentor young chefs. And, you know, and it's always been, for me, that's kept me grounded. And so, because a lot of times, you know, the term celebrity chef or celebrity, it ends up inflating folks. And so I've always been very cognizant of that. When did like, let's say, like, that sphere aura happen for me? I would say in 2007, so kind of we're dating back to Amada. We opened in 05. We started to get some good kind of accolades and recognition around the restaurant. Personally as well, I was nominated for a James Beard Award that year. And, you know, Food Network called and they said, hey, can you interview for a season of Next Iron Chef? So they were trying to recruit another Iron Chef, a competition to become an Iron Chef. I didn't make that cast. Michael Simon won that year, but they invited me to come cook on Iron Chef against Chef Flay. Okay. So Battle Melon 2007, I had Chad Williams was one of my sous chefs, Tim Spinner.
That's my cousin.
Yeah, and congratulations to Chad on a great year, a great accolade. He won James Beard Best Restaurant, which is an amazing accolade, a great thing for Philly and wonderful for Chad. But that year, we beat Bobby Flay in 07, and that was great, you know, kind of, you know, more like national, it became a little more national. And then in 2009, I competed for second season of Next Iron Chef. I competed against 10 other chefs, won that competition, and became an Iron Chef. And that, I would say, that was a pivotal moment in my career as far as like national attention.
Right. There's not a lot of Iron Chefs.
I mean, no.
It's been around for a while, but there's still...
There's only seven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Only seven. And I think that's an accomplishment and something that, you know, no one can take away from you. Mm-hmm. You'll always be an Iron Chef no matter what. And it was great. And that was kind of like, I would say, the beginning of opportunity, more exposure, more, just more things to do for sure.
Yeah. Do you love it? So the cooking is what you loved. The competition is what you loved. Now, with all of this and the celebrity chef, and you said you're not, don't call yourself a celebrity, but you're on more TV shows than a lot of celebrities. So the celebrity chef kind of situation, does it take away from your ability to just love the cooking, you know, or does it enhance it? Because now you got a lot more things to do.
Yeah, no, I think that it's awarded me a lot of great opportunity to continue to do what I love to do. And that's the thing that I've really, I appreciate and embrace because, and I'll give you just for an example, Bill. Mm-hmm. So we have at Wells Fargo, at the stadium here where the Sixers and Flyers play, we have a stand called Garza Seats, right? And I was challenged to say, hey, they're like, hey, we're going to give you the stand, Jose, but we want you to rotate the menu and we want you to create elevated stadium food. And I was like, I'm the perfect guy for that.
Time limit. I got to use like Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
I can do this on my own.
Yeah. So on just a few days ago, I was in there like creating and they said, hey, we really want a great cheesesteak. Perfect. I'm making a Wagyu ribeye cheesesteak with caramelized onions, truffle provolone fondue, an amazing bun. And I'm like, all right, here we go, guys. Boom. So Philly fans, you come in, you got to come try my cheesesteak over there. But, you know, I'm just in this moment where I'm like, wow, you know what? This is such a privilege to be able to, like, you know, ask for the best ingredients, make the best thing that I could possibly do in this category, and have fun with it and mentor some chefs along the way. And so, yeah, Bill, honestly, I feel I got to pinch myself most days that I'm here, I'm doing, and I'm doing it in the way I want to do it.
Still having a good time with
it. And having a great time with it, yeah.
You've said mentor a couple different times. You mentioned Chad Williams, I said, my cousin, who just won a James Beard Award. You won a James Beard Award. What does it kind of feel like with that mentoring being so important to you that now, and you're still young in this game.
Yeah.
Now you're seeing people who you helped train who are kind of achieving that level of success.
And that's, you know, that's the best part of it. You know, when you see the folks that have, you know, come through our ranks and have, you know, been, you know, under my tutelage or cooked for us, and they have this success. I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than that. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, Chef Nook from Kyala, she won an iron. She won a James Beard this year too.
Okay.
She was in our catering department. She was at catering and events, and you know we have probably you know over 100 employees in catering and events. I was never able to connect with her while she was with. I think maybe one or two times, but post our time with us, she was like, "Hey, chef, I just want to thank you for, you know, showing us your culture, showing us, you know, how to work in the right way," and very appreciative gal. And I thought, like, wow, that was such a special moment. And I'm upset that I didn't get to her. Kind of like, you know, hey, realize, wow, what a talent. And so, and that's kind of what, honestly, in our industry, it happens. There's a lot of folks that are here. They need a moment. You know, you need that moment. You need that break in order to get ahead. For me, there were a lot of, you know, fortunate moments, whether it was being asked to audition for Iron Chef or, you know, walking down Chestnut Street and finding my first restaurant. It was there. A chef friend of mine was kind of like done with the space and was like, "Hey, we want to come look at it." And just very, very fortuitous. So yeah, that's, you know, I think in life that's part of it too.
I was reading that you're walking around exploring Maine. You talk about walking about, you found a restaurant down here. Is that part of the whole thing? You just go around, you explore ingredients, you're in the markets. Like, what's walkabout all about?
Yeah, well, you know, I think certainly during this time in my life, I've become, you know, more mindful, more aware. I love hiking. I love being outside, being outdoors. Maine is just one of those places that you know, my wife and I have been looking for a location maybe to, you know, outside of what's happening here in Philadelphia for us, which is a lot. You know, there's a lot happening here. The city is very energetic. We have all of our businesses here. So it's, you know, it's a lot, right? And so we were looking for this place to kind of maybe spend long weekends, hang out. And we found, just right outside of Portland, a spot that we really like. And we've been going to this summer. And it's beautiful. And, you know, for a chef, the seafood's amazing. Like, you know, I want to get into lobstering. I want to, like, go learn how to excavate sea scallops. I want to fish. And so there's beautiful coastline and amazing seafood. So for me, it's a nice place to go relax before I come here and kind of do what I need to do here in Philadelphia.
I bring that up because you're doing stuff like that. And at the times that we've talked over the years, you talk about something and then I hear about it being the next restaurant. You're like, "I really love pizza. I'm from Chicago." And then you start doing that. Is this laying the ground foundation for something else, or is it just walkabout?
No, I'm doing everything in my power, Bill, not to do any business in Maine. Keep my focus here in Philadelphia and let that be a place of respite, kind of, because you do, you know, as a creative person, I think everybody needs time and space to continue to create and think clearly and help, you know, provide the right energy to your business. And so for me, that's going to be that location. And, you know, so far, so good.
Couple more things to touch on. President's Council on Sports. So now presidents are inviting you to participate in these types of things. What's that?
Yeah. So I'm super proud of this distinction. It's every administration, going back to the Eisenhower administration, has nominated and created their own council on sports, fitness, and nutrition. Okay. So I was nominated by the Biden administration with, you know, quite a few other very established folks nationally to help, spread the word about sports, fitness, and nutrition. And so this past June, I was sworn in to the council with, you know, other folks like Steph Curry, Ryan.
No big deal.
Yeah. Ryan Howard, Tamika Catchings on the athletic side, along with a lot of other really prominent, I would say, forward-thinking people in these categories: sports, health, fitness, and nutrition. And we recently met. I'm on the nutrition side of things, so I'm gonna try to use my culinary knowledge, everything I've learned over the last 30 years, to help Americans eat better, eat healthier, get more fit. And yeah, it's a very, I'm super proud of that distinction, to be able to serve. I've never served in the military, and I've never, I feel like I've benefited a lot from this country. I've had great opportunity, and I've been able to take care of my kids and family in a positive way. So this is a great way, I feel like, to really do some good work.
We've heard about the truffle cheesesteak super bun at the Wells Fargo Center. We know now about franchising Buena Onda.
Yeah.
And people still have opportunity to get involved with that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So people can get more information on that if you're the next franchisee.
You never know. Yeah, hey, come see us. And, we've recently sold some franchise. I don't know if I can disclose it, but we're excited about our first franchisees that are come on board and really help them succeed as well.
Very cool. So look out for that. But we can't talk all this time without giving us a little something. Like, what should we now be looking out for? Some of your favorites. You got new restaurants in the area, expanded restaurants, some of your favorite stuff that we need to go and check out.
Well, I'll tell you what. So I've been... I've had restaurants in the city, in Philly, for a long time. And I think for many years I've been asked to go out to the Main Line. Like, hey, Jose, come on out to the Main Line, come do it. And I was always a little hesitant, I think, because I'd heard how finicky folks are. I've witnessed folks like come out to the Main Line and not do well, some respected chefs that I know. So we had this opportunity, and I just felt like the timing was right. And so we opened an Amada in Radnor, and it's a beautiful restaurant. It's a great environment. It feels like you're in Spain. We did a really nice job renovating the space, and I've got these amazing grills. They're called Mi Brasas. They're like wood charcoal grills. I've wanted them. They've been like a bucket list, like equipment piece for me for a long time. They're self-contained charcoal oven. So you put charcoal and wood on the bottom, and the cavity gets to about 800 degrees, and it's just, you put things on a grill grate, close it up. There's so much flavor that happens within that cooking method. So we have a few of those there, along with a wood burning oven. So we're excited about what's happening out there, and we're starting lunch this week, so you can come out and experience this during the day. And yeah, it's just a great space. So I'm excited about that. I'm gonna definitely be spending some time there this fall.
As we start to wrap up on The Pulse, we talk about the whole concept of use your voice for good is what drives this show. We end with that, but before we get with that, your chef in residency program. I now have met a couple of the chefs who have worked with you. It's in that same vein of mentoring and what have you. Actually, I've become cool with some of the chefs. Kiki Arenito
is one,
and several others. Tell us about that program and why that matters to you.
So that was we ran that for 2 years at the Kimmel Center Performing Arts Center. We really, this was like post, kind of like getting out of COVID and really knowing that chefs, up and coming chefs and talent maybe had a tough time during COVID. So we wanted to shine a spotlight on those folks. And for me, I've been through so much in this career. I've seen so much. I've experienced so much, whether it is on the culinary side or on the business side, I kind of understand where some of those folks might be. So to be able to mentor them and at least, you know, shine a spotlight on them and give them, you know, kind of that next boost to like whatever their aspirations are at that point has been great. And it's kind of where I'm at, Bill. It's like, I think that I can give a lot back and really help. And so, that feels good. You know, just like anything, it's better to give than receive. That's where I'm at right now.
Words of wisdom for the next person, the next you who may be sitting there right now watching this show, mom's going, you need to get a job. And they may find the spark that you found.
I mean, I think that, and I've been talking to my kids about it, it's really about finding your passion. You know, what really like drives you? Like, what is it that, you know, you wake up thinking about and that, you know, really, you know, gets you motivated? I think that's important, and it's a discovery. We talked about earlier, I didn't know I had this passion for cooking. So really take your time to observe what that feels like, where you're going to be driven the most, and then go for it.
And then finally, use your voice for good. When you hear that concept, and I feel like you've explained it a couple different times.
Yeah.
But when you hear that concept, what does use your voice for good mean for you and your life?
Well, I think that words matter a lot. I think that, you know, words can be impactful. And so, but beyond that, actions matter as well. How you kind of follow through on that. So when I think about use your voice for good, I feel like it's twofold. Right, it's using your words wisely and correctly to motivate and do, but the do part is really what counts from my side. So, you know, kind of proof's in the pudding. Like, hey, behind those words, what are you doing about it?
Chef Garces, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Come on out and check you out at all the restaurants.
Appreciate it, Bill. Thank you.
Eat. No Easy Bake Ovens or Sour Patch Kids.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with celebrity chef, my words, not his, Jose Garces, who really has built what can only be defined as an empire from cooking and from a passion that he kind of stumbled into because he needed a job. Like, that's the entire theme of the Pulse, inspiration and motivation and use your voice for good. And I hope that many of you listening were inspired by that mid-20s, not knowing what your passion is, can still lead you on a very successful journey. Do me a favor, look at your screen, your tablet, your phone, wherever you're listening to this, and hit the like, follow, subscribe button so you get a notification every Monday when a new episode of The Pulse comes out. You can also head over to YouTube and search for past episodes. Some really cool ones, Michael Blackson and Chrissy Metz and who else? The Steve-O from Jackass fame and Jazzy Jeff and UFC fighter Rashad Evans. There's so many. Just go do a search and check out some past episodes that you may enjoy. 70, my technical director and editor tells me here in studio. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Of course, I always appreciate you. Hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. And I leave you, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.